Hello, everyone. This is Andrea Von Kampen, and welcome to my podcast, It's My Party. This is a podcast where I sit down with women who I find to be interesting and creative, and we have meaningful conversations. So, if that sounds good to you, let's get started. Today on the show, we have Nashville-based singer-songwriter Molly Pardon. I met Molly 2 years ago when she played a show in Omaha, and after the show, she agreed to get goldenrod pastries with me the next morning in Lincoln. I picked her brain on all things music and music business and realized that she was a special soul. Molly has released several EPs and 2 full-length albums. She has amassed millions of streams on Spotify, toured extensively, and was featured on The Late Show with Stephen Colbert. In this interview, Molly and I dig into the craft of songwriting, what it's like being a singer-songwriter in the world of streaming. We discuss her upcoming tour to the UK and so much more. I hope you enjoy this interview and be sure to subscribe to this podcast even if you don't like this interview. Without further ado, Molly Pardon. What coffee are you drinking?
Oh girl, I just made some Brooklyn Roasting Ethiopian Natural.
I just
got in the mail a couple days ago.
Oh, wow. I feel like you take your coffee so seriously. Is that right?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. For sure.
What's the best coffee in the Midwest?
Archetype? Okay. Is that in Omaha?
Yep.
Yeah, I think they're award-winning. I think they're like Barack Obama's top, in the top
500. That makes sense. You know, I've been trying to get close to Barack, and... You want to hear something a little weird?
Go for it.
Now 3 people follow me on Twitter who are followed by Barack.
Oh, interesting.
I mean, doesn't that seem like I'm getting closer at least?
For sure.
Yeah. I mean, and now I've got this coffee angle that I could work.
Yeah. Well, that is totally fabricated fact, but you could just throw it out there and see if it does anything.
I'll just do a tweet. I'll include you and those 3 people and just see if I can get to him.
Yeah, quote
me. Anyways, thanks for being on my podcast, season 1.
I'm excited.
Yeah, me too. I feel like I have a lot I can ask you. And I've been listening to your music all morning. And I want to start it off with Time is Medicine, your first full-length album, 2011. The song Travelin' Souls.
Mm-hmm.
Is there an inspiration musically for that song? Because I heard a really strong correlation.
Okay, let's see.
Do you remember that song?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of like who I was influenced by when I was writing it. I mean, Mindy Smith, Alison Krauss, and Jay May were my most prominent
influences. Will you go back and listen to it and tell me if you feel like it sounds like it's from Mamma Mia 1 or 2?
I've never seen it. But I will reference that.
It sounds like ABBA to me, and I love it because I love ABBA. What? Go back and listen. Everybody listening to this podcast, listen to this song right now. I don't know if this is the particular song you want me to be highlighting this entire podcast.
Go for it. It doesn't get a lot of love lately, so I'll take it.
I was listening to that whole album this morning, and that song came on, and I was like, wow. This is giving me ABBA vibes. Okay, cool.
Interesting.
Anyways, let's start from the beginning, Molly. Did you always know you wanted to write songs for a living?
No. I didn't know that writing songs and touring the world was an option.
How so? How did you not know that was an option?
Music wasn't a career path that was prominent in my family or in my ancestry anywhere. And I never really thought about songs as little creations until I was in my teens and started taking a liking to some songs. I mean, honestly, my like early childhood, like the music that I listened to as a kid and a teenager was Christian music and worship music, church music.
So is this like contemporary music or is this more like hymns?
Yeah, contemporary music, which is nice. It's just kind of boring. None of them. I wish that I would have been exposed to hymns at an early age, but
yeah,
you know, whatever. But yeah, I never really thought of songs as these special little things that people pour their heart and soul into.
What was the song that made you realize that's what songs could be?
I don't know. I have no idea. Maybe a Mindy Smith song. She really struck me as remarkable and memorable. I heard her album One Moment More and just fell in love with every track. Yeah.
That's so cool. I have to listen to that album. So what age was that, would you say?
I mean, that wasn't until like 20. I was 19 or 20.
Okay. So at that point, like 19, 20, are you in college at this point?
No, I didn't go to college.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That was a good decision.
Yeah, I feel good about it now.
Yeah, that's a really good decision. Nothing against college. It's just, you know, like wildly expensive and semi-useless.
It just sucks.
For the artist.
Yeah, nothing against it for sure.
Anyways, you skip college. What are you doing during the college years?
I worked at Starbucks.
Okay.
And lived with my parents and started dating a musician that I met through church. And I would go to his shows in the Atlanta area and in like the South Metro Atlanta area. And that's kind of, that was my first exposure. Thank
that's
you.
Cool.
To live music.
Yeah. Wow. And sort of like live music in not like a religious genre, just live music.
Right.
Like that's great.
A gig.
So then how do you get from there to 2011 writing ABBA inspired songs?
It was mostly just the Lord.
The Swedes.
Through that boyfriend, I met other Atlanta musicians and eventually moved up to Atlanta in 2010 and lived there for 3 years.
Which town are you in at this point?
Jonesboro.
Okay.
Jonesboro, Georgia. And yeah, I moved to Atlanta and just like met a couple of songwriters up there. I moved in with a stranger who ended up being a really sweet friend. And yeah, just like started playing open mics. I played the Eddie's Attic open mic.
Yes,
and
love Eddie's Attic.
Eddie was running it at the time, and he loved me. And
oh my gosh,
let me open a lot of shows. So,
what a great connection!
I know that was miraculous. So, it's many thanks to Eddie Owen and Tyler mm-hmm. Lyle for introducing me to the music scene in the Southeast.
That is so sweet. So, yeah. Did you make that first record then in Atlanta?
I did, yeah, in okay. my friend Joel Seibel's bedroom
nice.
With his three roommates who were electric guitar player, a drummer, and then his brother was a bass player.
Okay. And did you write all those songs by yourself?
Yeah, I did.
Wow. That's great. So you make this first record, then what do you do with it? Like at that point, did you have a team? Did you sort of have a release plan or was it just like, okay, here we go?
Yeah, I mean, at that point, I still had
because that's really early days, like for Spotify too, like for streaming.
Yeah, right? I think the songs were on iTunes. I don't think they were on Spotify for several mm-hmm. more years. And at that point, I still didn't know like what touring was. I didn't mm-hmm. know the album cycle. I had mm-hmm. no team. I just did it for fun because I had 9 songs to record, and it seemed like a good idea. So, like, I had a CD release show at Eddie's Attic.
Nice.
And then I just hung out in Atlanta and, like, worked a waitressing job. Actually, at that point, I was working at a children's toy store.
Okay.
The most boring job I've ever had.
Selling children's toy by day.
Yeah, so boring.
That's so cool.
And I would just sell my CD at local shows or mm-hmm.
and
out
is
of
the,
my car.
Is the plan right now, like, I'm going to work these jobs, but I know that I'm working towards being a musician?
No, I know it's funny. I had met a few people who talked to me about their publishing deals. Like co-writing and publishing deals weren't a huge thing in Atlanta, I don't think, but maybe it was a Nashville person that told me about a pub deal. But they were like, yeah, I write, you know, 12 songs a year or 24 songs a year and just turn them in. And that made my stomach turn.
Wow.
Because it had taken me like 4 years to write 9 good songs.
Oh, wow.
So I just, like, at a young age, I just resolved to always having another job
okay.
so that I could slowly make music.
Huh. That's crazy. I was thinking 12 songs a year. I was like, one song a month? Like, what are they doing the rest of the time? But that's
sleeping
what's so cool
30 days.
About the writing process is it's so different for everybody. Like, I haven't met anyone who has a similar process that I do. I'm sure you probably feel similar. Like it's a very unique thing, the way in which you write songs.
Yeah. Well, I want to hear about your writing process. Do you have like, is there a process or is it different for every song?
So for the most part, when it's time to write a record, I just sit down every single day for 1 hour. I turn on a timer. And like, if I go to the bathroom, I stop the timer. If I go get coffee, I stop the timer. And I force myself to do a full hour of writing. And the first 2 days are usually terrible. And I also record the entire session. And then like, I'll take a walk a couple hours later and listen back to the session. So the first 2 days are terrible. And then by the day three, I'm writing and getting things I like. And like, I can write pretty quickly with this method. I mean, I almost am worried to say this because I know this will, I'll jinx myself. But the other thing is that I read a book a week, and I do that no matter what. Even if I'm not writing, I read a book a week, and I'm constantly stealing lines and ideas and characters, and I'm writing them in notes. So by the time it's like time to write and do my hour session a day, I have pages or, you know, pages of notes on my phone. Yeah. Of things I want to write about.
Wow.
Right now I'm working on a project based on a book. So what I do is I read the book meticulously, and anything that seems remotely poetic, I write down. So I've got like 35 pages of Google Docs right now of things that seem poetic, places I could take songs. And then I've gone back through half of it because I'm only halfway through, and I'm combing through and writing songs based on the poetic parts. So I'm like 7 or 8 songs into this project, and I have half of the book left. So that's a bit more time intensive. But if I'm just like, okay, I'm gonna write a song, I just sit down, think about my inspiration, start with chords, and then write it. Mm. What do you do? I mean, I feel like you take a lot more time with it. Like, I feel like maybe your songs are a lot more profound because you're not like doing timed hour sessions on a clock.
Well, lately I have, for the last year, I've been writing every morning as soon as I wake up.
Love that.
And that has helped like clear the way, clear my mental space. Mm-hmm. Or some actual good shit.
I bet.
So I have noticed that my songs from this year, or, you know, from the last year, since last January, mm-hmm. have been really good.
Are you really militant with yourself? Like, you do it every single morning, no matter what?
Yeah. So I read this book, The Artist's Way. Have we mm-hmm. talked about this?
No, we haven't talked about
it. Okay. I read Julia Cameron's book, The Artist's Way, and the morning pages are like the homework every day. Mm. And so I read the book. I started last January, and it's a 12-week program, as it were. And then I just continue to write morning pages, which is just 3 pages of stream of conscious writing.
Wow.
As soon as you wake up.
So you're writing pages. You're not like getting a guitar out and writing songs every morning. Okay. And then you take those pages later and write music.
Sometimes. Mostly that's just like to get my brain decluttered. But sometimes, kind of like in therapy, you'll like drop a bomb in the last 4 minutes of therapy.
Totally.
So it's so funny. Some
by the way, I confronted that enemy we've been talking about for 3 years.
Right. It's like some of my pages are so silly. They're like, dear diary, it's cold today. My cat's inside.
The artist's way.
Yeah. And then I'm like, blah, 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 blah. By the way, I don't like my mom right now. Bye. And then I'm like, what was that?
That's so funny.
It is really interesting how at the end, when I'm like, antsy and I just want to be done with these pages, like some really beautiful prose comes out. It's mm-hmm. crazy. Mm-hmm. So sometimes I'll flip back through the pages, and if I can remember which days I wrote something worth rereading, I'll like take out another notebook and transcribe some lines. And then some of my songs come from that. Some of my lyrics start from morning pages. But one of my favorite things to do lately is to do 10-minute free writes.
Okay.
My friend Alice Harden taught me about doing this, just setting a timer for 10 minutes, not quite 1 hour. I would die. Just kidding. Set a timer for 10 minutes. Pick a topic first, or a word or a phrase.
Okay.
Set the timer for 10 minutes and just write pretty much stream of conscious or, you know, whatever. Yes. If there's no right or wrong way. And that can be a really fun way to come up with lyrics.
So would you say this is sort of like your new approach to writing? Like, is this yeah. how you wrote the other stuff or was that a totally it's different not. Approach? Okay.
Yeah.
This is a fun thing. I like this. I feel like yeah. I should do more stream of conscious writing. More just writing. So what did you do for the other stuff before this? What was your process there?
Well, for like Time is Medicine and I mean, for all of my old songs, all my songs that are currently out there, mm-hmm. they were pretty much like journal entries.
Okay.
Which to an extent is like stream of conscious writing. It was just like really totally different, really intense feelings that just okay. kind of poured out.
And were they personal feelings? Like for the most oh my part, gosh, the songs you were writing are about you.
Oh yeah. All That's of them.
So fascinating.
I really don't write about other people.
That's just all I do. That's crazy. I feel like almost none of my songs are personally about me. I don't know. That's probably the reading thing, though.
Maybe.
Because all of my inspiration is from other people.
Yeah.
I'm just stealing everything. So you put out an album in 2019 called Why Worry?
Yeah.
And it's a cover album. Mm-hmm. What was the thought behind that?
The thought was I wasn't ready to release my next album, my next mm-hmm. album of originals. And
yes.
I wanted to feed the algorithm. Mm-hmm. And pay homage to some of my favorite songs of late.
Totally. I love yeah. that cover album.
Thank you.
Your voice on any song is so pleasing.
Thank you.
Hello, it's My Party listeners. I'm taking a quick break from this week's episode to tell you all about our sponsor, Agora Art and Ceramic Studio. Agora is a small, woman-run business that makes ceramics, jewelry, and paintings. I can attest to the wonder of these Agora coffee mugs. They are literally made by hand, and I was at a party a few weeks ago. I saw a friend drinking out of the Agora cloud mug, and I immediately had to have it, so I purchased it. I have never looked back. I use this coffee mug every morning. And if you want to also have this amazing morning coffee experience, you can go to agorastudio.art and use the code PARTY15 to receive 15% off your purchase from now through August 1st. Once again, that is Agora, A-G-O-R-A, studio.art. Also, feel free to follow Agora on Instagram, TikTok, and sign up for the mailing list at agorastudio.art. Now, let's get back to the episode. So, somewhere in between these albums that we're talking about, you make a move to Nashville. Will you talk about that?
Yeah. So, I moved to Nashville in 2013. That was a couple years after I released Time is Medicine. I had just, like I said, I was opening a lot of shows at Eddie's Attic in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. And I met a lot of Nashville artists that would pass through that I got to open for. So mm-hmm. it intrigued me that they were all congregating in this city not too far away that I'd never really been to. So I just made the move.
That's cool.
2013. Yeah. I went in almost blind. I just, it's so weird. I had no idea what a hub it was for mm-hmm. music.
And that's 2013, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's so interesting because I think I went to school in Nashville in 2014, maybe 13 into 14. So we would have been moving there around the same time.
That's so cool.
That's really interesting. Although I left and never came back and you stayed. So what does that say?
No, something's wrong with one of us.
Let's unpack that. No, I'm just joking. So after 2013, is all of your work made in Nashville then?
Yes.
And what is the difference then, working in Nashville on a record versus working in Atlanta?
Well, I guess the biggest difference is just the city, mm-hmm. the city in which we were in.
But did you work with different people?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I just worked with whoever was closest and cheapest, honestly, mm-hmm. and whoever showed interest in recording me. I mean, I was still in the mindset of just kind of like doing this for fun. I really didn't have a goal.
That's so crazy to me. I've always admired how relaxed you are. Like when we first met up and talked, and I felt like I had all these burning questions. And I think of time, like I'm so stressed out by time. Like I'm always trying to like be manic about getting everything done. Mm. And I remember chatting with you at this Goldenrod Bakery, everyone knows, and saying, you know, I was like asking all these questions and every answer you're like, yeah, I don't know. It's cool. And you were just like so relaxed.
That checks out. That sounds like me.
But I love that though. I love that you mean you're just so, I don't know, you just are very calm about everything, which is cool.
Thanks. Yeah, I'm not sure where it came from. I have theories, but I'm not sure.
Okay.
Middle child, big feelings of being unimportant.
Have you done your Enneagram?
Yes.
Do you remember what number you are?
Yes, I'm a type 9, wing 1.
Oh, that's what Brett is. You guys are like destined for sainthood. Unfortunately, mine is incredibly negative, so I probably won't be sharing it publicly. It does not reflect well.
Oh my gosh. Incredibly negative? 4 yeah. or 6?
No.
No.
8. I sent it to you in the chat.
Oh my gosh.
It's so bad.
That's so interesting, because I usually repel these.
And every other person like that.
My gosh.
It's weird because like yours is sort of like your mantra that you're supposed to recite to yourself is, I'm important and what I want matters. Which is like really sweet. Yeah, that's the 9's mantra.
Oh.
And mine is like, stop being such an awful person. Like that's my mantra.
That's really funny.
Oh man. Anyways, so it might come from your childhood, your feelings of being calm and not manic about getting things done or controlling others.
Right. Yeah, I think it does come from birth order and mm-hmm. family dynamics. So I'm just like, you know, things are going to happen when they happen, if yeah. they ever happen.
So let's take this sort of mentality and talk about touring. What was your first tour?
My first tour was in 2010, March 2010. I sang harmony vocals for Peter Bradley Adams for 4 shows. He flew me out to like DC or Baltimore, I can't remember. And we did like just 4 little shows. One of them was Mountain Stage.
What?
Yeah. I had no idea what Mountain Stage
really
was.
That's so cool.
It's just like, yeah.
I also just learned about what Mountain Stage is. So, I mean, they don't broadcast it in Lincoln. So how did you get connected with him? And was this just like such an exhilarating thing?
It was so exhilarating because I was not a professional musician at that point. I had 1 EP that is no longer on the internet.
Okay, I was going to say, didn't listen to that this morning. So
no, I met Peter at a show in Atlanta called the ATL Collective.
Okay.
And he played a featured set at the end of the show. It's like a show where a group of Atlanta musicians cover a classic record
okay.
from front to back. And then a featured artist plays a set at the end. So he was passing through. He played a set. I thought it was awesome. And then I like reached out to him, told him he played a great show or something. And he found my MySpace, heard my music, and asked me if I wanted to sing with him at Eddie's Attic later that year.
That is so cool.
So yeah. So I got to sing on the Eddie's Attic stage for the first time in like December 2009 mm-hmm. with Peter Bradley Adams.
That's insane.
I know.
And then he took you on tour for 4 dates.
He took me on tour. And wow. then eventually he started asking me to open his shows and sing with him.
That's so amazing.
Yeah, that was the beginning of a long-lasting, just really, really lovely friendship and musical relationship with Peter.
And so what's like the first tour that you went on that was like you playing your stuff headlining?
Headlining. That was July 2019. It was some shows that I accidentally headlined. I thought I was co-headlining them.
That's the most Molly thing I've ever heard.
But when I got there, my name was the biggest. It was a little miscommunication.
Oh my god, that's amazing.
Yep. I played like Chicago, Detroit, Indianapolis. Man, I feel like a couple other places. I don't know why I can't remember.
Mm-hmm. And do you like touring?
I do. Every mm-hmm. tour's different. I mean, it depends.
Can you explain that a bit?
Sure. In my older years, I have realized what I need to make a tour work for me. So as long as I get what I need, as long as I can like bring my creature comforts with me and, you know, and as long as the people I'm going with are a good hang, then it'll be, I can have a good time.
That's everything. You just need a good hang.
Yeah.
It's got to feel right.
Yeah, because that headlining tour, the surprise Molly Pardon headline, was so much fun, even though there were like 20 people at the Chicago show, 2 people at the Detroit show.
Wow.
And
Detroit can be tough.
It was tough. But like, despite that, I had so much fun because of the band I was traveling with. Like, they opened and then backed me up for half of my set. Wow. It was really cool.
Wow.
Shout out, amazing. Carriers and Turtle Doves.
Thank you guys for backing her. Molly, what has been your worst show ever?
Oh my gosh, worst show ever. God, the one that comes to mind is playing the Neighborhood Theater, I think is what it's called, in Charlotte. Have you ever played there?
Okay. Mm-mm.
It's Neighborhood something. I was opening for Sons of Bill, who are a Charlottesville-based band, and they were touring like for the first time in 3 years. And so it was a horrible show for me because people were so loud during my set and I was just playing by myself. It was so, I cut like 3 songs from my set because it was so loud. I could hardly hear myself. And I knew that most everybody was just like stoked to be there and see each other. They were catching up during the opening set, you know, whatever. That's the risk you take being an opener.
Absolutely.
But it was so soul crushing. And I like got off stage and took a walk around the corner for or around the block for like 10 minutes and cried.
Yeah.
And then came back.
Yeah. I mean, like those opening sets where people yell through your set slash yell at you slash ask you to play Carrie Underwood are the lowest points of the job, I think.
Yeah.
That and tax season. I mean, those are the two worst parts of the job.
Yeah, I mean, facts.
I think it's cool that you sort of started playing shows once you were like a full-grown adult. My worst shows come out of like the ages between 12 and 16, where it just like played some really weird, bad shows.
Give us an example.
Well,
where were you playing at 12 years old?
So my brothers were in a band before me, and they had played a lot in Nebraska. And when I became old enough to be able to memorize and sing songs, I wanted to take their spot that they had during the Seward 4th of July day. Okay, so Seward, Nebraska, where I grew up, is the 4th of July city. Did you know that?
Sure didn't.
Okay. Well, we make GMA every year, so I'm not sure how you've missed this press.
Don't have a GMA.
Anyways. Oh my gosh. I'd still think it could have gotten to you, though, somehow. Anyways.
If you had tried, like, Molly.
I just like opened your eyes. I don't know. So this is the biggest day of the year in my small town. And my brothers have played this coveted spot in my mind at the Civic Center, like 10 a.m. at the Civic Center. And when they retire from their group, I thought it'd be a very easy fit in for me to fill their spot singing what I think is maybe jazz standards. I'm trying to remember. But yeah, that's how it started. I played there, I think, at the age of 12, and I did like 30 minutes of jazz songs. And then like throughout high school, I sometimes played guitar for things. But I have told this story before, but like the first gig that I played that was pretty bad, my dad and I did a duo set in the basement of the Methodist church for a group of people that were biking across America, and they were stopping at local churches.
Okay.
And they wanted a hot meal and entertainment for the evening. So my dad volunteered us. and we played some songs. But actually, that was the gig where he had the biggest mess up he's ever had. Oh. He could barely get through this beginning instrumental part. It was very embarrassing. We had to start over. I mean, it was humiliating. He humiliated me. No, I'm just joking. But then we got paid in drawstring backpacks.
How many?
2. 1 for each of us.
Drawstring backpacks.
And I think there was some info about biking across America in there, if I remember. We also, around that time, I think that gig might have parlayed us into getting a gig to make a commercial song for a local realtor.
Okay.
So the two of us got in the studio and we made this. So yeah. Anyways, wow. I am envious of you for starting as an adult so that you spared yourself some of these embarrassing moments from a young age. Okay, I want to ask you about, did you go to France this fall?
Yes. Yes, in September.
Will you tell me about that?
Yeah.
I feel like I really got to know enough about that in real time.
Okay. So I have a friend named Isaac Wardell who used to be based in Virginia. And, well, about 10 years ago, he called me up and asked if I wanted to be part of a hymns project that he was doing. Like, essentially, he was writing hymns, taking sacred text and writing songs. And he gathered some of his favorite musicians and singers and kind of delegated songs to each of the singers and recorded a group of them and a group of the songs. And it became, he would put them out under the moniker Bifrost Arts.
Okay.
So I got to be part of one of those recordings 10 years ago.
Wow. And where did that take place?
It was in Charlottesville, Virginia.
Okay.
And we really haven't worked together since then until this past fall. He hit me up at the end of August and said, "Hey, do you want to come to Paris next week and record on a new project I'm doing?"
What?
So, yeah. So it was so crazy how it all worked out, because like I had just phased out of a nannying job a month early. Like the parents found daycare for the child a month before we expected them to. So I had a month off before I was going to start a 2-week tour. So yeah, I just like moved a haircut around, canceled a church singing gig. And,
that's crazy. And then you got on a plane to Paris. Later. Was it just amazing? Was this your first time in Paris?
It was amazing, but it was my second time in Paris.
Okay.
It was really cool to have a purpose while I was there and to be hosted and to be there with other musicians, especially to be like doing something I love to do in this beautiful city. It was the perfect time of year. Oh my gosh.
I'm so jealous. And you got in right before things kind of got scary again too, in terms of just like some shifting lockdowns and things. So that's great.
It was really, really awesome.
Wow. And now you're going back over, not to France, but to UK, right?
Right.
When do you leave?
Tomorrow.
Oh my gosh. I can't believe you didn't shift this around with your haircut. No, I'm just joking. So
yeah, I leave tomorrow evening.
Okay, tell us about this tour. Tell us about how it came to be, your excitements, your fears, the length of it.
Well, in December 2019, an agent at ATC Live reached out to me and signed me. And then the pandemic came full force in March in Nashville, March 2020. But this agent had like a tour for me in September. Remember back then when we thought it was going to blow over by like June?
Yeah. The summer will save us.
I know. That was so sweet of us.
And it did for a minute. Hopeful.
It did. It truly did. Well, Graham, my agent, has been like working hard to get me this tour, this headlining UK run.
Is this your first time touring UK as the headliner?
It is.
Cool. But you have toured UK before?
I have.
Okay, cool. So anyways, he got you this tour.
Yeah, he got me this run, which was going to be mostly UK, but also Ireland and Northern Ireland. Just like Belfast and Dublin. And I think I announced it in November.
Mm-hmm.
And then by December, like right before Christmas, I touch base with him every week. And around Christmas, I was like, is this still happening? I think I had bought a plane ticket, but I was, you know, nervous that I had just wasted a bunch of points. So he said, you know, it's kind of too early to tell if we're moving forward or canceling. Mm-hmm. But because I am going over there as a solo artist. My chances of the shows still happening are a lot better. And because I don't have a huge fan base, the crowds are probably going to be pretty slim. So that's like all working in my favor.
Yeah, that's amazing.
It's a great time to be a solo under the radar artist.
It really is. You heard it here first, folks.
So, I mean, I was still just like planning to fly out tomorrow. You know, this time a month ago, I was like, all right, well, I'm going to do it, but I don't know if I have shows to play.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll just be hanging out in the UK for 6 weeks, yes. 9 weeks. Good Lord. So it wasn't until like Tuesday of this past week that my agent was like, okay, we're optimistic about shows happening.
And wait, this is a 9 week tour?
No, but it's a 9 week trip. Okay. With I think I have 12 shows.
Okay.
12 shows up front.
That doesn't check out time-wise. I'm so confused. What?
Okay. So I'll be gone until the 31st of March.
Oh my gosh.
I'll be gone for 9 weeks.
Okay.
9 week trip, 2 week tour.
Got it. And then are you like being a tourist for the rest of it?
I don't know. I'm hoping that my agent will get me other shows.
We are so different, Molly. Do you have like a place to stay?
Yeah, in the first 3 cities.
Oh, wow. And then what's the plan for the rest of it?
Book lodging as soon as possible.
Okay. All right. So we might need to wrap this podcast up so you can.
I mean, I'm like, I have just been given the promoter's emails like 3 days ago.
Okay. And so you have three places booked to stay, and you have 8 weeks and 5 days or 4 days of lodging to figure out.
Yeah.
Okay. Are you like staying with friends for any of this?
I hope so.
Okay. Well, you know where you should go.
Tell me.
You should go to Wales. You should go to the little town in Wales where I have those friends who do the hardware commercial every year. Tom.
The Halfwit
Hardware, that cute little shop in Wales. It's a town that looks like it's pronounced Rioter, and I don't know if I'm saying that right. Anyways, I'll get you connected with them because that'd be really fun.
Where the Prince bought your record?
Correct, yeah.
Got it.
Yeah. I don't know. You could maybe have a good time. I'm just saying.
Oh my gosh.
Like, I mean, you are the one who has 6 weeks to fill, so.
You're right. You're right about this. No, I am winging it right now.
Mm-hmm.
It makes me nervous to not know where I'm going to stay for most of the time.
But you do have some friends that you might stay with. Did I make that up? Okay, you do.
I hope so. Good. We'll see.
Well, I would say I would really like you to go to the C.S. Lewis Museum for me in Belfast.
Mm. Okay.
So if you're looking for that, like maybe go to Wales and then go to that museum and tell me how it was. Just if you have free time to kill.
Okay.
Yeah.
C.S. Lewis Museum in Belfast.
Yeah.
Do you know why it's in Belfast?
Well, because he's from there, which is actually really weird. Yeah. I always thought he was English, but then I read a biography by him about him. I think it was by G.K. Chesterton, and he was born in Belfast.
Cool.
Or at least Northern Ireland. I think all this is right. I should probably check all this. Anyways, really I'm like fun. A little nervous about your trip. Like I'm starting to feel nerves. But it's going to be great.
Yes, it'll be fine. I'll be fine.
Okay, good.
Life has a way of always taking care of me, so.
Well, that's an amazing way to see life.
I'm mostly worried about just lugging around a roller, like a 28-inch suitcase on wheels, a big-ass duffel bag with my merch in it, which will hopefully shrink quickly.
Your guitar.
Backpack stuffed and a Calton case with my guitar in it.
What gear do you travel with? Do you like bring pedal boards and anything like that?
No.
Okay. What?
A tuner.
Okay. Yeah.
Two quarter inch cables and a power supply.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the way to do it. I've started to bring my board around and it's so annoying. I mean, it's great once I get there, but just like that added thing. And then you end up like always leaving it.
Totally. I know. I had an LR Bags DI, left it at a venue.
Oh, no.
So I have not bought another one because I would just leave it.
Oh, man.
What pedals do you use?
I have the Felix from Longmont, Colorado, that like really nice pedal for your guitar, like a preamp, I think. And then I use something for vocals, and then I have a tuner. But I just like put it on a board, and it's not even that big. It's just once you're trying to pack for weeks and you're flying, it's so annoying. It's like the first thing to go, which is not great. The first thing should go should probably be four of my extra pairs of shoes. But I'm like always convinced like this is more important.
Totally.
It usually is. Wow. Well, I'm so excited to hear about how this trip goes. Definitely keep me posted. Where do you think you'll be spending the most time in? England, Ireland, Scotland, Northern Ireland? What are you hoping to spend the most time in?
You know, initially I wanted to spend some downtime in Western Ireland. One of my favorite authors, John O'Donohue, is from there, County Clare or Connemara. And I just want to be there. I adore him. And I want to like be around his spirit. But I'm not sure when. So I did have to cancel like the Dublin and a Belfast show, but my agent is trying to get me a week of shows in Ireland, in Northern Ireland.
Nice.
So that's great. Hopefully that will like fill up, you know, a lot of my downtime. And if that does happen, then I hope to spend a lot of time in Western Ireland.
Love that. And I think I've asked you this. I asked if you were Irish, and I remember you said you didn't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
But like Molly Pardon, isn't that like such an Irish name?
It does sound very Irish.
I mean, I think we need to look into this. If anyone knows what Molly's heritage is, please write in. Let us know.
I think a few of my sisters have done 23andMe.
Oh, okay.
And one of them said something crazy. And one of them said we were like German and Irish and English.
What makes sense?
I don't know. Maybe I'm making that up.
Wow. All right. Well, I really hope you have a great tour.
Thank you.
I can't wait to hear all about it. I can't believe you leave tomorrow. Thank you for chatting with me. This has been so fun.
Oh, thank you for having me. What an honor.
Thank you so much for listening to today's podcast episode. If you'd like to check out Molly's music, you can find it wherever you stream or download music, or go to her website, www.mollypardon.com. Follow her on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, or wherever she is to learn about upcoming tours and releases. Speaking of tours, I'm headed on tour this May and June with Avi Kaplan. Check out my tour dates at andreavonkampen.com to see if I'm headed to a town near you. Thank you all so much for listening, and have a great rest of your day.